We discussed earlier in the week, just the, go through the rudiments again. The three tshuvas we're doing this week are similar in the sense that they involve a related set of doctrines, related analysis relevant to our discussion of intellectual property. Just to summarize the cases of the three tshuvas, Nod Behuda was discussing a case of a printer who was hired by a client to print a shas with the client's pirush on it, the arrangement that we would call vanity publishing, where the client pays for the printing and he gets his farm. Printer, once the type was all set and he had the frames all set, he said, why waste all this work? He'll print his own shas. Customer was not happy. It would compete against his shas, and he wanted either to block the printer or at least to get him to pay for using the frames and the type that he had set. Amud Eish concerned a fellow who had researched and developed some kind of industrial technique, tzvia, painting or dyeing, written it down in a book. Someone, without permission, took the book, copied this valuable industrial information, and the Amud Eish again wanted it to be returned, the questioner wanted it to be returned or at least to get paid for the use of his work. Divrei Malkiel discussed a fellow who had developed a formula, a procedure for making some kind of fancy water. He calls it Mayim Merichim Mesukim, fragrant and sweet waters. And he wasn't even concerned as much about the formula, the proprietary information, as he was about the fact that he had invested a lot of money in getting a permit from the Warsaw Health Ministry, safety or efficacy, which he says can move on. Understandably, this costs a lot of time and expense. And the other fellow was just formulating the same thing and freeloading off his work, printing the same labels, permit number, everything, and was freeloading off all his hard work to produce the same stuff. It was cutting into his sales and causing various other potential harm to him. And again, he wanted this either stopped or at the very least to collect compensation for the use of his work in navigating the regulatory process. So all three of these tshuvas involve the two related doctrines, basically, of nana and of shutfus. Nana is the idea that if you benefit from my property, under certain circumstances, I have the right to charge you to pay for what you benefited. And shutfus means many things, but in our context, the idea of shutfus is, if two people have a mutual need, each one can compel the other one to pay his fair share toward the mutual need, and not to say, okay, you did it, now I'll benefit and I'll walk away. So now discussing some of their arguments in a little more detail. So the Nod Behuda rejects the argument of shutfus. He argues that just means up front, if we both have a clear, well-defined need, we can both force each other to contribute our fair share. But after the fact, if you spend money and now that I see the outcome of your work, I see it available, I say, okay, now that it's here, I'll take advantage. The case of the river. The Gemara says, if we're all farmers and we all need irrigation and the river has to be fixed, we all have to pay for it. But in the case where you went ahead, you had a field, you fixed the river, and now that I see the river's good, I say, oh, you have a river, I'll take advantage, I'll plant my field too. That, Nebuta says, there's no shutfus there. After the fact, there's no, you can't make me pay for the fact that you cleaned the river.
Is that clearly stated or is that implied?
Which?
The second halacha.
That's Nebuta's Kiddush. He says, you, the Shoel, you wanted to say that just as in the case of the river, the Gemara says they all have to contribute, so too here. Since at the end of the day, the printer is using the same type, he should have to contribute part of the cost of doing this. In other words, reduce his fee. So Nod Behuda says, no, that's only up front. If they both need it, each one can force the other one to contribute. But after the fact, there's no such thing. The other guy can take it. If you already did it, he can take advantage and benefit from it. Now, Nod Behuda says that in the case of the farmer, he says, if one person had a river and had a field, and he fixed the river for his own field, and then someone else came along and said, oh, now the river's fixed, now I'll use it, I'll go ahead and plant. After the fact, he doesn't have to pay. But Yehuda carefully says, though, that was because it was a sadda shaloha yadarka lezra, because the second farmer is an opportunistic farmer. Now that he sees he has a river, he'll decide to plant. He wasn't necessarily planning on planting. First guy was definitely planning. He's willing to do whatever it takes, spend money, fix the river. The second guy was not convinced he's going to be a farmer this year. Now that he sees the river's in good condition, he decides to be a farmer. The Yehuda implies, hints at the fact that if we're clear up front that both farmers are definitely set on farming and they're going to have to get the river fixed that one way or another, the fact that the first guy was jumpier and ran ahead and did it and didn't wait to get the second guy to sign on might not make a difference. As long as it was clear from the front, the second guy also needs it, even if he's waiting for the other guy to do it, Now, the Yehuda may agree that even after the fact, he can still charge him. The case of the printing, he said, the printer himself never planned on printing the Gemara until he happened to have the guy's type in front of him. But the Yehuda may very well agree that in a case where both of them need the thing up front, in a case where it was clear that both of them are planning on printing Gemaras, just one of them is going to wait for the other one to do it and then take his thing, that Rabbi Yehuda might agree the idea of shutfus would be shaykh. There's a very interesting shuvah in the Marashag. Marashag was talking about there were two businessmen who needed to ship merchandise from point A to point B. So they did it by the train. And Reuven, one of the merchants, rented a train car. It sounded like in that arrangement, it wasn't per kilogram or per volume. You had to rent the whole car as a unit. So Reuven said, okay, I'm renting a train car. He loaded all his merchandise in, and the train car was half empty. So we found Shimon. Shimon also had half a train car worth of merchandise. He said, Shimon, I have some empty space. So Shimon said, fine, I'll use it. And they didn't negotiate. They didn't discuss, always a big mistake, they didn't discuss payment. So when they got to the destination, Reuven said, okay, chip in your share of the train car. Shimon said, why? Zenen of Zela Chaser. You didn't do it for me. You rented it. You didn't rent it with me in mind. You didn't know anything about me. After you had the space, you couldn't do anything with the space anyway. So you gave it to me. But why should I pay for it? I didn't cost you anything extra. You didn't do anything for me. So the Marashag says, you're absolutely chayef to pay. And he brings another Behuda, who says that this idea of shutfus, that if we both need something, we have to chip in. Rabbi Yehuda says that's only up front, that's not after the fact. And he does not seem to make the distinction I made before, that if it's clear that we both need something, even after the fact, you have to pay. He seems to assume that Rabbi Yehuda, in his case, would say that you're not chayev. He says Rabbi Yehuda is wrong. Rabbi Yehuda is making a mistake. He says even after the fact, as long as l'maisa I use it and I benefit from it and I get a financial advantage from it, I am obligated to contribute my fair share. And therefore, in the case of the train, he is chayev. Now he adds one very important bit of analysis, that the Ramah paskins like a shita of Rabbi Yechiel of Paris, brought by the Shilta Gibarim. The Shilta Gibarim is talking about a case where I do something which benefits, again, both of us. The specific case was some of our books, our Sfarim, are in trouble. They were confiscated by the government. The whole mass of them were confiscated. My books, your books. And there's only one ransom. It's not a per book ransom. The ransom is going to be one sum has to be paid to get us out of this mess. One sum will take care of all the books. So one person pays it, and he turns to the other one and wants the other guy to chip in his fair share. Does he have the right to do that or not? So Rabbi Yechiel of Paris says it depends. If he did it knowing of the other guy's predicament and specifically intending to do it on his behalf for both of them, then we have a kind of shutfus model, and even after the fact, the other guy has to contribute. But if he wasn't aware of the other guy, he didn't do it on behalf of the other guy, he just did it on his own, then he has no right to turn around and ask for compensation. Now that he found out, he happened to be doing a favor for the other guy. It all depends on whether he knew of the other guy and he did it on his behalf too. There's one of my favorite tshuvas is a wickedly funny tshuva of the Bnei Aaron, or Aaron LaPapa, important Turkish posik from the late 17th century, the time of Shabsei Tzvi. He talks about the following case. Reuven borrowed money from a non-Jew, a Turkish non-Jew. The non-Jew died. So Reuven went to the executor of the estate. He said, here's a bribe. You're in charge of his account ledger. Please go to his book with all the chavos in it. Find my account. Tear out the page. Bring it to me and you can have this bribe. Fine. So the corrupt executor took the bribe, went to the book, tore out the page, gave it to Reuven. Reuven walks home a happy man. So while Reuven is walking home with this paper in his pocket, he looks at it. He sees there are a bunch of other Jews on the same ledger. So he promptly turns to them and says, please pay your fair share of the bribe. I just got all of us off. And they said, why? We have a windfall from Minashamayim, we got a windfall. You didn't do it for us. You didn't know we were here. You acted purely selfishly. Why should we contribute? There was no having any of them were going to pay. There was no talk of actually paying. But the point was, why should we pay you? You didn't do it for us. So the Bnei Aaron has a long, complicated, detailed tshuva, a series of tshuvas actually. But the basic ruling, the basic holding is based on this sheet of Rabbi Yechiel of Paris. Had he known about them and deliberately acted on behalf of all of them, that would be called shutfus, and he would have the right to turn around and say, pay me. Since he didn't know about them and he didn't do it for them, he just found out after the fact that he happened to incidentally benefit them, he had no right to charge them, and they are all putter. Again, discussing why this is considered moral behavior, that's a topic beyond the scope of our lecture, but the basic principle for our purposes of shutfus is this rule of Rabbi Yechiel of Paris, which on the whole seems to be the consensus in the poskim, that in cases like this, it depends on whether you knew of the other person or not, and you acted on his behalf or not, intentionally or not. Therefore, says the Marshag, in the case of the train car, he says a very bichidish, he says, the idea of shutfus would apply had you rented the train car on behalf of you and your friend Shimon, you knew he needed cargo space too, of course you'd be chayav. In this case, that's not what happened. When you rented the train car, you didn't know Shimon was out there. You found Shimon after the fact. You bumped into him at the train station or wherever you found him. Nevertheless, he says, you're still chayav. In spite of this rule that distinguishes between doing it for his benefit or not. And the reason is, he says, because people who rent train cars, they know that they may find somebody later. They often don't know in advance who somebody is, and they don't know for sure they can find somebody, but they anticipate finding somebody. They hope they can find somebody to share the car. And therefore, he says, that's good enough. That's close enough to this rule of doing it al das somebody else, even if you don't have somebody in mind, even if you haven't found him yet. The mere fact that you often do, and you're anticipating doing so, and you're hoping doing so, that's enough to be chayav. We used to have this question in Lakewood a lot. Let's say I rent a car to drive into Brooklyn for a Shabbos. I'd like to split the cost of the car among some other people. I don't have anybody in mind yet, but I know Friday's a big traveling day, and it's quite likely I'll find somebody else. So that's mamash the case of the Marshag. That's called, he says, asal dash nehem. Even though I don't have any specific person in mind, the mere fact that it's common to find people and I hope to find someone and I anticipate doing so, that's called asal dash nehem, and that's enough to be chayav. So the Nodeb Yehuda says, in his case of shutfus, there's no shutfus, since it's after the fact, and he's an opportunistic guy taking advantage, he is not chayav. The Marshag says Nodeb Yehuda is wrong, that at least when it's al dash nehem, you're going to be chayev. And the Divrei Malkiel also holds like the Marshag, and even more so, the Divrei Malkiel says that the guy who invested money on getting the permit from the health ministry, that's considered os al dash nehem. That's one of his two arguments. The other argument has to do with Nen of a Chasler, but his first argument is that that's called os al dash nehem. Even though at the time I didn't know you existed, he says, since you're turning around, that's called shutfus. He doesn't really get into the exact standard of asal dash nehem, but he says that's called shutfus. Since after the fact you decided to take advantage of my work and make it and build a business on it, so he says, and you showed that you're willing to spend money and do it. You printed up your labels. He says he's actually not sure whether printing up labels is good enough because you didn't spend extra money to include the permit number. Labels he needs either way. So, but nevertheless, he basically is inclined to say that is an idea of shutfus. Again, he doesn't really explain how he deals with this rule of us dash nehem. Even the Marshag only said because you anticipate finding somebody to share the car. I'm not sure how that applies in the different Malkiel's case. You can't say that when he got the permit, he anticipated somebody producing a knockoff and freeloading off all his work. But nevertheless, the different Malkiel invoked this notion of shutfus, even in his case, that since at the end of the day, you built a business on my hard work, I have the right to charge you for that work. And Rabbi Yehuda disagrees, and the Marshag is somewhere in between. Now, I was never sure, for the years I learned the Divrei Malkiel, I was never sure how far to take this. My mashal always is, let's say GM lobbies the government for something like lower fleet mileage, for the lower fleet gas mileage. And they buy a congressman and they get the law passed that they can have less fuel efficient cars, great for business. So GM and Chrysler also benefit. And does that mean that Ford and Chrysler also benefit? Does that mean the GM can turn around now and say, you're doing business based on my hard work, you have to pay me for it, even though we did it purely selfishly? So again, the Divrei Malkiel says it's only if he was Megala Das that he's Nechale. But again, I'm not sure where Gili Das fits into that. They're clearly Nechale, they clearly want this. Maybe they wouldn't have done it on their own. So you get into all these Chalukim, but the Divrei Malkiel, the point is, it's a very powerful svara. The idea that an expense that I undertook for purely selfish reasons, if it's something that you need for your business too, I have the right to turn around after the fact and demand that you compensate me, that you pay your fair share, even if you weren't even in business when I started. The mere fact that you decided to build a business and take certain action based on what I did, I have the right to turn around retroactively and demand that you demand that you pay your fair share of the business.
What about a case of with river, the guy who fixes the river has anticipation that his neighbor will start, even though the neighbor has no intention of doing it, but he does start later.
Yes, yeah,
so contradiction of the two, because the first one was that the neighbor, we're going on the neighbor's understanding that he had no intention of doing it. He didn't want to fix the river. But now, what if he hasn't, the first
yeah, one so, fixes so the Marshag is disagreeing with the Nadbi Yehuda. The Nadbi Yehuda is the one who's Mechadish, after the fact, you'll be Potter. The Marshag doesn't hold like that. The Marshag says that the Nadbi Yehuda is wrong, even after the fact. In his case, he says the printer would be chayav to the customer, and the river case too. Anticipation would be enough. Yeah, those seem to be the two sides of the same coin. The Nadbi Yehuda takes a much stricter standard, and the Marshag says even anticipation is enough. If you don't even have anticipation, then already the Marshag might agree to the Nadbi Yehuda that if it was after the fact and you had no anticipation, then it sounds like he would say Potter. But in the case where you did anticipate, that might be a machlokas between the Marshag and the Nadbi Yehuda. One last point, touched on this Monday, just want to emphasize it again, I saw further discussion about it. This whole idea, the other idea besides Shutfus is Nana, the idea that if you benefit from my work, then I have the right to charge you, and even though we say Zeh Nana v'Zeh Lo Chaser is Potter, that if I benefit and it didn't cost you anything additional, then you're Potter, barring the application of the rule of Shutfus, but in a case where it's Nana v'Chaser, where I benefited and you lost, then you're Chayes. So the various acharonim say that if my production cuts into your business, that's called chaser. My shas will cut into the sales of your shas, my water will cut into the sales of your water, my involvement in the painting or dyeing business will cut into your business. That's called chaser. They debate whether that's really called chaser or it's indirect. I'm not directly hurting your property, I'm just hurting your financial interest. It's a question of nan of a chaser. One objection, though, is in the case of the Nadbi Yehuda, let's say, or in the case of the Zivir Malkiel, I'm not benefiting from your property directly. Most of the cases in the Gemara of Nana, I benefit from your physical object. Something you own, I benefit. My cow ate your grass, your straw, I benefited from your property. Even when there's no mazik, there's a machayev of Nana. But here, I benefited from what? I benefited from the printer benefits from the type that the customer paid for. It's his type. It's the printer's own type. It's true that it was his money that paid for it. He doesn't own it. His job is over. He's finished. He paid for it. He walked away. He doesn't own the type. The Rebbe Yehuda seems to think that the abstract notion that you're benefiting from my outlay, from my work, that's a remarkable extension of the idea of Nana. And the Gemara Kiel holds the same thing. He said, besides the idea of Shutfus, he invokes the idea of Nana, Nana v'chaser, you're benefiting from my expense, my outlay in navigating the regulatory process, and I'm chaser because you're cutting into my business, among other things. Again, you're not Nana from a physical object of mine, you're benefiting from work and expense that I had. And we do find there are acharonim who disagree with this, who say no such thing. Baruch Frankel Tumim and Rabbi Yeshua of Kutna, the Yeshua's Malchai, they say, what are you talking about? They say, Nana has to be, you benefit from my property. The Yeshua's Malchai said, Nadbi Yehuda is wrong. In his case, you weren't Nana from anything I own, you were Nana from the abstract notion of my work. And that's not enough to be called Nana. And that really cuts to the core of the whole application of Nana to intellectual property. This is what we're doing, this is week two of intellectual property. One of the ideas to Mechayev someone for copying someone's book is that he invested time and money and effort in producing the idea, producing the work, and you're copying, you're freeloading, you're being Nana from him. The problem is that really called Nana? Can you say somebody is Nana if he's just Nana from my abstract work? The book already is mine. I bought the book. The physical book is mine. So I'm not being Nana from an actual chefet that belongs to you. I'm being Nana from your work. Is that enough to be considered chayef?